The topic I want to talk about is personal identity, or roughly, what are we? What sorts of things are we, all of us in this room? So to get started on that, I want to consider a sort of science fictional case and maybe ask you what your reactions are to it. So imagine, if you will, that for some reason, me and you, we both agree to undergo an operation whereby our brains are removed from our skulls and swapped, right? So my brain is put into your body and your brain is put into my body. That's not currently technically possible, but it seems like in principle that could be possible. It might well become technically possible at some point in the future. So scientists take my brain out and hook it up in the right way to your body and put it in your skull, and they do the same with your brain, put it into my body, hook it up in the appropriate way to the right nerves and so on, close over the skull. Okay, so we've both been anesthetized, we wake up from our anesthetic, and the person in my body seems to remember, for example, having sat there and listened to this talk. They've got all the personal memories that you have or you had from your life. There seems to them to be a continuity between the life that you were having up until then and the life they are then having. They love all the people that you loved before this operation. They have all the same intentions and goals that you had before the operation, and vice versa. So the person that wakes up with your body and my brain, they have all the same intentions and goals as I did. They love all the same people. They have a sense of continuity with the life that I've led up to now. Okay, so in that imaginary scenario, there's a question. Which of those two people is you, and which is me, if either? So firstly, can I just get some sense of what your reaction is? So which of those two people would be you? So is it the person that wakes up with your body, but my brain and all of my mental states, or is it the person that wakes up with my body but your brain and all of your mental states?
The person is defined by the behavior, not the body, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So the body is not important, but the behavior and the characteristics, mm-hmm. which we assume is stored in mind. Your you is something else.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your thought is, in that case, you, as it were, follow your brain. Okay, so the person that's you is the person with your brain. Does anyone...
I would say the other way.
Okay. Why?
Well, because people recognize your body and they recognize you. The fact that you've changed personalities, they might be able to accept that.
Well, so in these cases, I think a lot of people tend to think that you follow your brain, as it were, so that in principle you could change bodies. So some people are not so sure about that. It's obviously not so clear. But a lot of people think that's right. So if somehow we were able to do this operation, the person who woke up with my brain and all of my memories and all of my feelings and so on, that would be me, even though it was occupying a different body. And if that's right, then one thing that immediately follows is that we're not just our bodies. So the answer to the question, what am I, it can't just be my body. So, I mean, of course, we can fill in the details of the thought experiment however we want, because it's our thought experiment, we're just making it up. But hopefully when we think about it, that shows us something about our notion of what we are. And if it's right that we're inclined to think that we follow our brains rather than our bodies, that would seem to suggest that we're not just our bodies, right? We're something else. So you might think, well, that must mean we're our brains, right? If we're not our bodies, we must be our brains. But there are other cases that would seem to suggest that that's not right either. So your brain works a little bit like a computer. And one thing that you can do with computers is that you can in effect, delete all the information off them and put all that information on another computer. So you can, as it were, scan all the information off one computer and put it on a different computer. So we can imagine doing that with brains. Okay, so some very clever scientists have worked out how to do this, and these scientists take my brain. They don't take it out of my body, they just record all the information that's on it, all the various structures and so on. They do the same with your brain, and then they scan all the information from my brain into your brain, and all the information from your brain into my brain. And this is going to have the same effect as the brain transplant, right? So after this is done, the person in my body will have all of your memories, all of your feelings and so on, and the person in your body likewise will have all of my memories, all of my feelings, my goals and so on. Now, in that case, I think a lot of people are inclined to think, again, you change bodies, right? Because you've got this continuity between, you know, what's going on with my body up until the point of the scanning experiment, and then there's somehow a switch into your body, and it continues from there, and vice versa. If that's right, that seems to suggest that we're not our brains either, right? So it's not just the physical organ of the brain that matters, because we can do this scanning swap between our two brains, and we haven't actually transferred the physical brains, and yet you might think we've transferred the two people. You may or may not think that's terribly convincing, but there are other cases that seem to suggest that we're not just our brains. So there are various fictional accounts of multiple people occupying the same body and the same brain. So think about the Jekyll and Hyde example being the obvious one. Again, it's a fictional case, but that doesn't matter for our purposes because we're trying to understand the concept of a person, right? We're not. It doesn't matter if it's if it doesn't actually happen. And that looks like a case where there's two different people who take it in turns, as it were, to occupy the same body and the same brain. And if that's true, then not only are you not your body, but you're also not your brain, because someone else can share that brain with you, and you're not the same person. Jekyll and Hyde is fictional, but there is indeed a psychiatric disorder called dissociative identity disorder, in which it appears to be the case that a series of different persons or personalities occupy the very same brain. It's an extremely strange disorder, more commonly known as multiple personality disorder, and there's a lot of controversy about what is really happening in those kinds of cases. But some people are inclined to think that in those cases there genuinely are several persons occupying the same body and the same brain at different times. It's very weird. Another point that seems to count against the idea that you just are your brain is that a lot of people think that you survive after death as a non-physical thing. So lots of people have had that belief. Lots of people still do. Now, that might not be true, right? I'm certainly not arguing that there is life after death or something like that. But people who think that, it doesn't seem as though they're just making a massive conceptual confusion. So you don't argue with those people by saying, oh, look, obviously that's not true because the body and brain die, so you can't survive. What those people think is precisely that you do survive after death. And even if that's false, it seems to be coherent. So it looks as though the concept of a person can't just be the concept of a physical brain, right? It can't just be a brain or a body. So those are a few kind of arguments that seem to suggest that you can, at least conceptually, you can come apart from your brain. You're not just your brain. So it might seem, when we think about those kinds of cases, that if you're not your body and you're not your brain, well, you must be some other thing, right? That seems to seems to follow. And the question arises, well, which thing? So it's not the body, it's not the brain. Well, what else is there?
The mind, the soul, the spirit.
Indeed. So here...
Define death.
I beg your pardon?
Define death.
Oh, so I mean just death of the physical body. So when I talk about people believing in life after death, I mean people who think that after physical death, after the death of your physical body, you survive. Good. So that's exactly what a lot of people have thought. What am I? Well, if I'm not my body, I'm not my brain. I must be some other thing. I must be something like a soul or a mind or something like that, where that's a non-physical object. Okay. So we've got a bunch of physical objects in the world, like tables and chairs and human bodies and human brains, but there's this other realm of non-physical stuff, mental stuff or spiritual stuff or something like that. And what we are is, as it were, things made out of that stuff, okay? So we're these non-physical selves or souls or bodies or something like that. That's a view that was famously defended in philosophy by René Descartes back in the 17th century. So he thinks, I'm not my body, I'm some other thing, I'm a non-physical thinking thing. Descartes has various arguments by means of which he gets to that conclusion. The rough kind of idea of what he's doing in those arguments is he's saying, look, we can imagine existing without bodies and without brains, and if that's right, he thinks it follows that we are some other kind of thing than bodies or brains. Nowadays, a lot of philosophers and a lot of people think that view is very problematic. So for one thing, a lot of people are very reluctant to believe that there really exist these non-physical, spiritual, mental type things, that there's this other realm of existence that's non-physical. People think, well, you know, if that realm of stuff existed, it should really show up a bit more. You know, we should have a bit more evidence of it, and we don't seem to have very much of it. So people think it's maybe a bit kind of spooky or something like that. But putting that aside, one worry you might have is that that doesn't really quite capture what it's like to be a person. So in that view, you've got this non-physical thing, so this, you know, soul or self that exists in some non-physical realm, and then there's this physical thing, a body, and that has a brain in it, but that's a physical thing too. But those bodies are somehow associated with souls, right? So there's something that makes a particular body your body. So there must be some connection between this non-physical self or soul and the body that you occupy, so to speak. Descartes has a theory about that. So he says your non-physical soul actually interacts with your brain through the pineal gland, which is just behind your nose. So he thinks that your non-physical soul kind of sends signals somehow through the pineal gland into your brain, and that makes your body move. But that sounds wrong, right? That's not what it's really like to be a person. So we don't feel as though our bodies are these kind of puppets that we manipulate. So it's not as though me in this non-physical realm, I kind of make some decision about how my body should move, and then a bunch of signals get sent, and then here in the physical world, my body does a bunch of stuff, right? That doesn't sound like that's not how it feels, at least, to be us. So a lot of people think that Cartesian view is not a very satisfactory account of what a person is, right? So even though it seems as though we are not identical to our bodies or our brains, it seems as though our relation to our bodies and brains must be more intimate than Descartes' view really allows. It can't just be this kind of puppetry relation that it seems to be on Descartes' view. So I just want to talk a little bit briefly about the view of the English philosopher John Locke, one of the great British empiricist philosophers, who was also working in the 17th century. So Locke agrees with Descartes that the self is a thinking thing. So what is a person or a self? It's a thing that thinks. But he disagrees with Descartes that that must mean that it's some non-physical object, so that you've got the physical body and brain and then this other thing, this further object that does the thinking. He thinks that's a mistake on Descartes' part. So Locke invokes this distinction, which is very important, between the relation of identity and the relation of constitution. So think about a statue made out of clay. Is the statue identical to the clay? Well, no. It seems as though it isn't, because someone could come along, for example, and destroy the statue by, you know, putting the clay into some compressor and making a cube out of it or something like that. So in that case, the person has destroyed the statue. There's no statue left. There's just a lump of clay, a cube of clay. But they haven't destroyed the clay, okay? So the statue isn't identical to the clay, because you can destroy the statue without destroying the clay. Similarly, think of a house and the bricks that make it. You can knock down the house without destroying any of the bricks. Okay, so now there's no house, but there's loads of bricks. Or you could even change individual bricks very gradually. Change one brick every 6 months. Eventually you've changed all the bricks, but you still have the same house. Okay, you just have replaced each brick gradually. So the relation between the clay and the statue, and between the bricks and the house, that's a relation of constitution, not one of identity. And it's a relation of constitution because even though the statue isn't identical to the clay and the house isn't identical to its bricks, nonetheless, there's a sense in which the statue isn't some further thing over and above the clay. It's not as though you've got the clay and the statue, where the statue is some other object off somewhere. You've just got a statue made out of clay, okay, or constituted by clay. Likewise with the house, it's not as though you've got, you know, when you've counted up all the bricks, it's not as though there's still some further thing to count, namely the house. Rather, what you've got is a house made out of bricks, constituted by the bricks. So Locke's view is that although we're not identical to our bodies nor to our brains, nonetheless we might be constituted by them. Okay? So we're not some other thing over and above our bodies and brains, nor are we identical to them. Rather, we're, as it were, made up of them or constituted by them. So what makes a person, according to Locke, is something's being a thinking, conscious thing, okay? And according to him, look, it's perfectly conceivable that the same thinking, conscious thing could be made out of one body at some time and another body at another time. And that doesn't mean that the thinking, conscious thing is some further object over and above the bodies, it just means it's constituted by different bodies at different times. So Locke would say that that's what happens in these kind of transplant cases or brain scanning cases that I described earlier. You've got one and the same person, now constituted by one body, now constituted by another, and that counts as the same person because roughly there's a psychological continuity. In other words, you've got the same mental life that continues across time, and it just happens that that mental life is housed in one body for a while and then it's housed in another body. So Locke says, imagine that you cut off somebody's little finger and somehow the consciousness went with the little finger. So the person's conscious mental life resided in their little finger, and the rest of their body became some kind of non-conscious automaton. Locke says, well, in that case, the little finger would be the person. Or to put it more carefully, the person would be constituted by that little finger and not by the rest of the body. So what matters, what makes a person is the consciousness or this mental life, according to Locke. And it doesn't matter what particular physical body or object that mental life resides in, okay? But that doesn't mean that the subject or person is some extra further thing, another, as it were, bit of furniture in the universe. So that's Locke's view, and that seems very plausible, I think, as far as it goes. However, I wouldn't want to finish without posing a problem. So more recently, a philosopher called Derek Parfit, who's a contemporary English philosopher, he's at Oxford, he has written on this subject matter, and he's taken up this kind of view that Locke has. And Parfit says, well, look, if you think about it, if you take the Locke view to its logical extreme, as it were, what you really find is that, in a sense, there aren't any selves at all, right? There are no subjects of consciousness. There aren't really any persons, if that means anything substantial. So I'll explain what Parfit means by describing another science fictional case. I hope you enjoy science fictional cases. So this is a fission case. So one thing that we find, it turns out, from scientific research, is that the two hemispheres of the brain can both support consciousness. There can be a mental life in either of the two hemispheres of the brain. That's just a scientific finding. It's very, very surprising and weird, but you can do very, very funny things where you separate the two halves of a person's brain, and it turns out that they carry on independent lives, basically. It's extremely strange, but it turns out that's true. I mean, I've massively simplified it, of course, just then, but we can take the simplified version. So Parfit says, look, given that that's in principle possible, we can imagine that scientists might come along and they might, you know, get a meat cleaver, split your brain in two, cut it down the middle. The two halves of your brain are connected by a clump of nerves called the corpus callosum. So you just hack that off, or, you know, cut it down the middle. So scientists come, cut your brain down the middle, separate the two hemispheres, and they put one hemisphere in some other body and the other hemisphere in a different body. Both hemispheres are supporting a mental life. So there's a conscious subject in both of those bodies now. So what's happened is there was you, a conscious subject, going along, living your life in your body. Then the scientists came along, and they've, in effect, as we might want to put it, split you in two, right? They've split your brain in two, put each half in a different body, and they've created, it seems, two new individuals somehow, two new subjects. So it's as though your consciousness has divided, okay? So here's the puzzling thing. So imagine this has happened to me. So one half of my brain went into John, and the other half of my brain went into Joe. Okay. In that resulting scenario, am I still there or not? Well, it seems as though if I am, then either I'm John or I'm Joe or I'm both. Okay, and otherwise I'm not there at all. Well, it seems as though I can't be both. Because if I'm John and I'm Joe, then John is Joe, right? So the technical way of putting that point is that identity is transitive. So if one thing is identical to a second thing and that second thing is identical to a third thing, then the first thing is identical to the third thing. So if John is identical to me and I'm identical to Joe, then John is identical to Joe. But they're not, right? They're two different subjects in different bodies. So I can't be both. So does that mean I'm one of them but not the other? But that can't be the case because it's completely symmetrical, right? So what would make it the case that I was one of them but not the other? Well, I mean, just by hypothesis, there's no difference, okay? You've just split my brain in half and put them in two different bodies. So it seems as though I'm not both of them, and nor am I one of them but not the other, so it must be the case that I'm neither. Okay, so it looks as though in that case, I don't exist anymore. There's nobody existing that's me. But the interesting thing, as Parfit points out, is that that doesn't seem quite the same as, say, death, for example. So if I knew that this was going to happen to me, for example, I would have various kinds of concern about the futures of John and Joe. So imagine if I knew that John was going to be tortured after the operation. I think it would be rational for me to feel fear. I would be able to anticipate that torture because there's going to be a conscious mental life continuous with mine in which this torture is going to happen, this terrible pain. That seems like I should be afraid, okay? And likewise with Joe. Similarly, I think either John or Joe could be held responsible for things that I did before the operation. So to kind of make that thought vivid, imagine, you know, suppose I'm a super criminal or something, and I want to commit a load of murders and then not be held responsible for it. Well, would I commit all the murders and then get myself divided, split my consciousness in two, and then afterwards the two resulting people, John and Joe, could both say, well, you can't hold me responsible, it wasn't me that did it, it was Connor. I think not, right? I think both John and Joe would bear the right relationship to me to be held responsible for my wrongdoing. And thirdly, this is a point for consideration, but Parfit thinks this case of fission, of being divided in two, although if you knew that was going to happen to you, you might be apprehensive in various ways, you wouldn't fear it in the way that you feared death, okay? So you wouldn't think of it as annihilation, okay? You would still have the sense of having a future. In fact, you have two futures. So what Parfit concludes from that is that really personal identity, so a person being me, being the same person as me, isn't really what matters after all. So in the fission case, I have the kinds of relations with these future persons, John and Joe, that I now have with my future self. So there's a sense in which I survive. In fact, I survive twice over. But neither of them are me, okay? So Parfit says, look, what really matters is not that there exists someone who's me, but rather just these psychological relations, this continuity of mental life. And when we're concerned, for example, about our own futures, when we fear things that are going to happen to us, or when we anticipate things, really it doesn't matter whether the person to whom those things are going to happen is us. What matters is just that we have the right kinds of psychological relations, these relations of psychological continuity with that person, whether or not it is us. Okay, so I'll stop there. Thanks.